Today's reading is from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 2, verses 1 to 11. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good, but then also prove to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. What does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet, when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. This is the word of the Lord.
Well, good morning, 11:30. It's lovely to be here with you all. My name is Darren. I'm one of the clergy, and can I add my welcome to that of Alex's. If you want to have your Connect open, just to make sure we're not making all of this up, we return to the great book of Ecclesiastes, a unique book in a sense, as it seeks to ask the big question and examine all of life under the sun. And last week we were introduced to the book and we got the thesis, so to speak, that all of life is meaningless under the sun, meaningless or vanity. It's repeated 38 times throughout this book. And I suppose it asks the question, can we trust it? Is it true? Do the sums add up for this thesis? Now, I don't mind telling you, I was terrible at mathematics as a young man at school. I didn't like mathematics because you couldn't even guess the answer correctly. If you guessed the answer correctly, you still got it wrong because you couldn't show where you had derived your answer from. You hadn't shown your formula or how you had worked it out. And now, as the great teacher gives us his thesis that all is meaningless, he now begins in the rest of the book to show us how he's worked this out, how his sums have added up, and asking us the question, do they add up or not? And this morning, he introduces us to the grand topic of pleasure. Well, I hope it will be a pleasurable sermon, but hopefully we will see three things. Firstly, the suggested thesis. Two, do the sums add up? And finally, hopefully, we will see the proof. For what we are told in verse 1, looking at his thesis, as he lays it out at the start of chapter 2, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good, but that also proved to be meaningless. What he's saying is, St. Andrews, come on, we're going to try out pleasure and good times. Who wants to sign up? There'll be tables in the north and south lobby, and for $237 a month, you too can sign up for this test of pleasure. That's what he's saying. I'm going to examine all of the pleasure that there is. Would you be interested? Well, I don't know about you, but growing up in Northern Ireland, I wasn't so interested in church. I thought it was boring. I thought it was irrelevant. I thought it was a list of do's and don'ts that were to keep people in their place. And people actually only really went to church when they wanted to get married or to meet a nice girl. And eventually we were going to have to do it, but we would bide our time for as long as possible. But as a young man, I began to feel disillusioned with life, looking at the troubles in the world and the lack of satisfaction that I was deriving from the things that I enjoyed in my life. I was confused by my compatriot, a famous footballer called George Best. He had a very famous quote. He said, I spent a lot of money on booze, birds, that's women, and fast cars. The rest I just squandered. This was a quote that captured a lot of the bravado of the age. But as a young man, I was left thinking, George, is this really true? Is this really it? It felt hollow. It felt a bit glib. Or was the answer more like the novelist Jack Higgins, who Jack says when he was asked if there's something that he knew as a young man, what he wished he had been told, was that when you get to the top, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. Is this it? Is this all we get? And no matter how much we achieve, we will not derive enough satisfaction from it. On the other hand, many of us will feel a bit disillusioned by this. We will think, well, it's easy for you to say Solomon, or it's easy for you to say great teacher, or it's easy for you, George Best. You did have it all. My life is miserable, and I would like some pleasure. But the great teacher in Ecclesiastes, he forces us to answer these hard questions. And indeed, the great teacher and the Bible, they are not interested in giving us glib or short or simple answers to the big questions of life. And we would do very well not to do the same. Because it says something so profound to us, I think, Ecclesiastes, in this modern experiment we live in called life. We have never lived in an age where the pursuit of happiness and the right of self-determination has been so prevalent amongst our society. I mean, our American brothers and sisters, they know this as it's built into their very constitution: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But it seems that globally, the experiment tends to not be going so well. For even though we live in an age that has never experienced more wealth or technological advancement, it seems that our contentment seems lower and our stress and our depression seems much higher. And it seems in this pursuit of happiness, we are constantly confronted with pain, brutality, and disappointment. Why is that? That is the great question that the teacher is trying to answer. And in verse 1, he shows us that even seeking pleasure, that also proved to be meaningless. This is the history through the ages. Even though he is so old, the great teacher is oh so modern. And it is our history from the great teacher to Jim Morrissey to Jimi Hendrix to Elvis to Kurt Cobain. They all ask the same question as Mick Jagger: I can't get no satisfaction. And this is the teacher. This is the man who has no limitation on his life. There is no gap between his desire and his reality. Would you like that? To have a magic lamp where you didn't just have 3 wishes, you could have as many as you want. What the teacher is trying to explore in pleasure is that deriving our satisfaction from it, well, it's about as useful as trying to build a snowman out of ice cream on Maon Shan on a Sunday in August. It's a diversion. It's a distraction. It will leave us feeling hollow. Not necessarily the wrong things, but not the main things in themselves. So let us see how he takes us through this. He starts in verse 2 by looking at laughter. Laughter, he said. It's the old adage that laughter is still the best medicine. Life's very difficult, so why don't we all cheer up, lighten up, and have a laugh? You know, guys, relax. You will get your lunch in an hour or so time. We can enjoy life. There's no need to worry. I think it's why we will always have a place for stand-up comedians. And isn't it just the best noise you've ever heard when you get a little baby? And when the baby just absolutely loses it with laughing, it just brings the house down. It just fills us with joy and with happiness. But the teacher says, well, happiness, when I try to derive my meaning from it, it's madness. What pleasure does this accomplish? And perhaps he is onto something. For why is it so often our most famous comics and comedians, those most full of joy, seem to have lives marred by depression and by darkness? Robin Williams, the great comic, famously said, I think the saddest people always try their hardest to make people happy because they know what it's like to feel absolutely worthless and they don't want anyone else to feel like that. And the tragedy that marred his own joyful and comic life. The teacher is saying it's not a bad thing, humor, but it's not the main thing. He takes us then onwards in verse 3 to alcohol. He says, my mind guiding me with wisdom. I think he's been a little bit coy that perhaps he woke up with a hangover. He's saying, after deep thought, I've come up with a solution. I'll go to the pub. I'm going to crack open the fizz. I'm going to cheer myself up with wine. I'll see what it is good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their life. Now, we don't know whether it was red wine. We don't know whether it was white wine. It probably certainly wasn't out of a box. We're told in this passage that he had a vineyard. It probably wasn't the two for $79 from Parkinshop. But it's true, isn't it? He says this was embracing folly. And it seems like he's not saying don't do this, but it does seem like an awful lot of sad and desperate and hurting people in our world, their only chance of escapism is to get together and crack open a few beers and forget the worries and woes of this world and relax just for a few hours at the weekend. Well, that's certainly what the beer adverts tell us, isn't it? And again, the teacher says, no, this is a distraction. And so many of us in this world, when we eat and we drink apart from God, it leaves us with confusion and addiction. And the teacher says, in alcohol, we are embracing folly as well if we are looking for meaning and satisfaction. Embracing folly. I think he's true because no one's ever embraced their toilet bowl at night after consuming too much and while vomiting into it said, Eureka, I have found the meaning of life. No one has said that. And this is what the teacher is telling us. No one says they are satisfied when they are hungover. So he takes us away from consumption and now to great works. In verses 4 to 6, he describes his great projects, houses and vineyards and gardens and parks, a wonderful environment that he created for himself. Perhaps the answer is here. Now, I don't think we need to work too hard. How many of us at St. Andrews would like to have a better or bigger apartment? I think we have a problem in our society when we measure our satisfaction by square foot in the windows of estate agents. If we could just get a little bit more. Or if I could just get a garden as well. If you have a garden, congratulations. Most of us in Hong Kong, we aspire to having box planters. And yet we know of the teacher, his great projects, and of King Solomon that his palace was even bigger than the temple of the Lord. And he's saying, no, this is not where you will find your satisfaction. Not at all. And yet we live in a world that is awash with dream house magazines, dream furnishing magazines, dream garden magazines. You have to wonder, is this where we find contentment? If I could just get that dream shower head, okay, then I'd be happy, okay? Self-cleaning and everything. Is that true? But it's sadly so much of what our world believes, if I could just acquire more. Acquiring more is what we see next. In verse 7, his possessions, he had many slaves and servants, and he had many herds and flocks, a display of his wealth. Do you have a dog or a puppy that you love and you derive pleasure for them? Well, Solomon did it better. 1 Chronicles 9:21, it tells us that he collected apes and peacocks. Solomon literally built a zoo for himself. You can read about it in 2 Chronicles. We're told in 1 Kings chapter 10 that Solomon had a ranch that had 4,000 stalls for his chariot horses and 12,000 other horses. I mean, jockey club, you can eat your heart out because King Solomon is the very personification of horsepower. He was awash with possessions. And if we're just saying, if I could just get that thing, if I could just get another helper, if I could just get a bigger car, a more powerful car, a sexier car, then I'd be happy. And the teacher says, no, this is not where the answer lies. It's not a bad thing. It's just not the main thing. In verse 8, he moves on to talk about wealth, to talk about money. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and of provinces. I think this is where we have to work the least hard in Hong Kong today, in a city that is set up to make its citizens money. We seem to think if we could just get a little bit more, lovely money, just a little bit more, and then I could solve that problem. Then I would be truly happy. But the teacher again says, no, this is not where it is to be found. We are told in 1 Kings that Solomon received wealth from all over. The nations brought their wealth to Solomon. He received 666 talents, which amasses to about 25 tons of gold. We're told in the same chapter that in his palace room, he decorated it with 500 golden shields. I mean, this is turning out to be quite the man cave he's building for himself. His wealth was off the charts, and he says, no, even this was a distraction. So where do we go after consumption, after projects, after our wealth? Well, perhaps we'll try culture and we'll try knowledge. In verses 8 and 9, he takes us to music. We love music in Hong Kong. We love music. At St. Andrews, we have it on tap. Do you know we've got a Spotify account now? And you can listen to the St. Andrews channel all week. Well, the teacher says he acquired male and female singers. He wasn't so much in the band as he actually owned the band. And he says, still, this is not where it was to be found. And so he turns to knowledge. Knowledge, the pursuit of learning. I don't think I need to do much work in this, because in a city where it seems we are paralyzed by our degrees, are they actually making us happier? Do we honestly think that our children will be more satisfied if they can just consume more knowledge? Well, we read about the teacher that he became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. All of his wisdom stayed with me. We know from Solomon, from Kings, that people came from all over to hear his knowledge and his wisdom. Please read about it in 1 Kings chapter 10. People came to see him. Such was his wisdom and his knowledge. What do bands do? They go on tours. What do politicians have to do? They've got to hit the road and the campaign trail. What did King Solomon do? He stayed where he was, and people came to see him. Such was his knowledge and was his learning. Is it a bad thing? No. But is it the main thing? The teacher says, absolutely not. And finally, where does he take us to? Well, the piste de resistance, verse 8, he takes us to sex. Is sex your main thing? Is that where you are deriving satisfaction? We are told that he had a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. He wanted for nothing. Men and women have fantasies. The great teacher just had reality. We know from 1 Kings 11 that he had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, okay? 1,000 sexual partners. This is not a good idea, St. Andrews. I don't know why you're laughing, but I estimate there's about 630 people in this room at the moment. When was the last time you were in a room with 1,000 people? It's probably at a concert or a really big church service. Imagine all those 1,000 people, their whole existence and their purpose was just to look nice and serve you. Would that make you happy? Solomon says, no, this is not where the answer is to be found. And in an age where sex is on tap and pornography and the internet, they've got men and women going backwards and losing their faith and living in shame, and sexual addiction through brothels and websites in every district in Hong Kong. Let me ask you the question, 1130. When you are promiscuous, when you sin sexually, are you satisfied? Do you say, Eureka, now I have found the meaning of life? No, of course not. It brings shame and it brings pain. And the world, yet it cries out, try me, try me. It is exciting. The teacher says, I've tried it. I've got the T-shirt. And it does not satisfy. And so we come to the proof. after this examination, this broad observations of different types of pleasure. We are told in verse 10, I denied myself nothing, my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. There was no gap, is what he's saying. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. What the teacher is saying is, yes, I did try these pleasurable things, and they were indeed pleasurable. I derived enjoyment from them. But now we come to the sucker punch in verse 11. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind, and that nothing was gained under the sun. What he's describing to us is the cycle. It's so true, isn't it? We set our goals, we achieve them, we experience euphoria, and then we feel hollowness and emptiness. Goals, achievements, euphoria, emptiness. That seems to be the cycle of the human existence. And this is the teacher whose success and expectation surpassed it all. Our very own modern writers, they ask the same question even this day. Michael Caine and Bob Geldof, two English greats, they said their autobiographies, what's it all about? And the philanthropist and singer Bob Geldof, is that it? People looking for answers and questions and satisfaction. What the great teacher is saying is that we're on a wild goose chase and there is no goose. It's all like chasing after hot air, chasing the wind. And can I ask you, what's your thing? Is it sex or is it money or is it possessions? What's the thing that you're deriving meaning from? For what the answer to the Bible, what the teacher shows us, is that these things will leave us feeling meaningless if we derive our ultimate identity from them. Many of us have a sneaking suspicion that this is true, but I think the teacher is so brilliant, for it's like he almost shows us that the things that we spend our life trying to avoid, the things that we think will bring us pain and we try and get away from, are not really the big problem. What we chase after, what we love, what we desire, what we pursue, all of the things that he has described, these are the things that will destroy us and leave us without meaning. One of the literary great Tolstoy, in a short book, The Confessions, which you can read about, you can read online. It's a wonderful book. It's very small. Let me summarize it for you. It's the story of his conversion and his Christian faith. He said that as a young soldier in Leningrad, he enjoyed wine, women, and song. These things were fine, but they were not meaningful. So he thought perhaps there is meaning in wealth. He inherited his father's estate and became one of the richest men in Russia. He said he could do great things, but he still felt hollow inside. So he decided perhaps meaning was found in fame. And he says one of the coolest lines in all of literature, so I wrote War and Peace, as you do. He says, I became a great man and people knew my name, but still I felt empty inside. So perhaps the answer was in marriage and family. So in 1867, he got married and he had 13 children. I quote, this for a time put me off finding the meaning of life. Until one day, watching his little boy play, he cried out in pain as he said, and I quote again, what meaning of life does the inevitability of death not destroy? What meaning in life does the inevitability of death not destroy? And as he watched the humble peasant go about his work, the words of Jesus Christ in Matthew chapter 11, 28 came very true to him. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Come to me, you who are unsatisfied, you who are disillusioned, you who are living in shame and pain, and I will give you rest. Do you want to know how to make sense of verse 3? What is good for a man to do in the days of his life? Do you want to know? It's to come to Jesus Christ and to be satisfied in him. Just like Augustine cried out, O God, you have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until it rests in you. Now, the teacher has not concluded his argument yet. We have a few more weeks to go with that. But we know as Christians on this side of the cross that true meaning and true value, it comes in God's Son, Jesus Christ. That even though we ignore the creator of the world, we pursue pleasure on our own terms, and as a result, the Bible says we are lost, miserable, without hope, without friends, chasing the wind, chasing the goose, but there is no goose. And even worse, we face the judgment of our creator for rejecting the pleasure that he wants to give us. How do we find meaning and answer in this world? Well, we turn back to that creator who gives us the ultimate proof, who says, I do love you. I'll prove it to you. I'll become a man and I will go to the cross. Do you want to find meaning in life? Find it at the foot of the cross. For Jesus dying there for you and me, it was not just a Galilean carpenter on another day and another crucifixion. It was God who became man. And he says, through my death, I will give you life. I will give you life that never disappoints, that never runs dry, that never runs out. St. Andrews, we would be wise to heed the teacher's words this morning and to not try and derive our satisfaction or contentment in anything else other than our Savior and our God, King Jesus. Amen. Let me pray. Father, thank you for the challenging words of Ecclesiastes, but yet are so pertinent and relevant to our times. We are sorry, Lord, that we are reeds swayed by the wind and we chase after foolish things. Help us, Father, to derive our satisfaction and identity in you. Help us, Lord, to put the good gifts that you have given us in their proper place. But, Father, that ultimately we would drink deep and often of you and the joy and love you give us in your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen. Going to have a few moments of reflection on the words of Ecclesiastes, and then we will stand and respond in song with the band. Thank you.